This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Mark Haney. News organizations across the country and around the world summed up Donald Trump's victory over Hillary Clinton with one word: shocking. Now he and the other winners in Tuesday's election have to find a way to govern a country that seems more divided than it has been in more than a century. Political junkie Ken Rudin and WVXU political reporter Howard Wilkinson join us to discuss the results of the election and where we go from here. And good afternoon, Ken and Howard.
Good afternoon.
Hi, guys. And I'm not sure if the one word is shocking. I've heard other words since Tuesday night.
I've heard surreal. I thought that was actually a very good word.
Other words I can't say on the air.
You can be part of our conversation this afternoon. 513-419-7100. Email talk at WVXU.org, or you can find us on Facebook or Twitter. And Ken, before we get the discussion going, what is our trivia question for today?
Well, the trivia question is, I mean, obviously we have Donald Trump being elected president and we have Rob Portman being reelected. When was the last time an Ohio senator, and who was he or she? Well, there wouldn't be a she, but who was the last Ohio senator who was elected the same year a first term Republican was elected White House to the presidency?
Okay, so let me show you.
Let me see if I can say that again. Try it again. The last time, what was the last time a senator, who was the last senator elected from Ohio the same year a first-term Republican was elected president?
Okay. And if you think you know the answer to that question, give us a call at 513-419-7100. And the first correct call will win a Political Junkie button. Again, let me see if I can sum it up here, Ken. Who was elected to the Senate from Ohio the last time a Republican won the presidency on his first try? Is that
correct?
Okay, that's exactly right. That's the question.
Okay.
All right. Again, if you think you know the answer to that, give us a call, 513-419-7100. Where do you start with this, Ken? I mean, I'm just amazed from a historical perspective. Have we ever seen any election like this one?
I say no, and I've been doing this a long time. I'm sure Howard's been doing it a long time, but even in years well before my time on this earth, I have never seen anything like it. I mean, people say, well, what about when Truman beat Dewey? Well, the polling was not as accurate then. There were far few pollsters. But this was somebody who just said all the things that ordinarily would disqualify a candidate, given his comments about women and the disabled and Muslims and Mexicans and all that, his failure to release his taxes. I mean, all those things, the list of things that would normally disqualify a candidate, and he won. And not only did he won in states that he was not supposed to win, in Michigan, in Pennsylvania, in Wisconsin. He won, you know, everybody said that the white vote was overrated, that after 2012, there were new demographics in this country, and the Republicans should worry about the growing Hispanic population. But he won despite all that.
Well, you heard all this talk about how the demographics have been changed forever, and it would be very tough for Republicans to ever win the White House again.
But he did. And the other part of this is the fact that there's never been anything in American history quite like this, because he was not a politician. He was a billionaire developer who went bust, you know, several times and came back. Reality TV host. He was not particularly political, although he'd give money to candidates. But he wasn't, you know, known as
a political
figure.
Of both parties.
On both parties, right. Including Clinton's. And you go back in American history, I mean, there's really nothing that can compare to this quite, you know.
Well, no, I've heard the last time we saw a populist uprising like this was, you guys can correct me if I'm wrong, but Andrew Jackson.
Well,
the whole mentality of drain the swamp was pretty existent back then,
I know,
too.
But Andrew Jackson was a public figure, was a general, was, you know.
Yeah, and this guy's our first complete outsider to ever win.
Right, and Jackson didn't have the kind of campaign commercials that Trump had.
Right, yeah.
Yep, 513-419-7100 if you'd like to join the conversation. And again, the trivia question is out there. Ken, you want to give that to
us
again?
Give it again.
Who's the last person elected senator from Ohio the same year a Republican was elected president on his first try?
Okay.
Okay, so if you think you know the answer to that, 513-419-7100 is the number to call. And, you know, Howard, I kept hearing about the silent majority. The silent majority is who's supporting Trump. And I hadn't heard those terms used since the Nixon years.
Yeah.
And I'm wondering how much you think that might have actually been a reality in this.
Well, I think it is to a certain extent. I mean, there were clearly people who were being missed in the polls, okay? People who were out there who were just angry or, you know, telling the pollsters, they wouldn't tell the pollsters the truth that they were going to go vote for Donald Trump. But there was this absolute anger and frustration and this idea of hopelessness that they were forgotten people in American society. And they came out in droves. And I'll tell you, honestly, there were a whole lot of them I don't think had ever voted before in their lives. They were voting for the first time.
And on the opposite side of that scale, all the and especially that early voting numbers that gave Democrats such hope, the thought about record African-American turnout and record Latino turnout and record female turnout, that did not happen. You had the first woman running for president and on a major party ticket in history, and yet Trump got the same amount, the same total as of the women female vote as Romney did. He didn't do worse among women than Romney did. There was no Barack Obama on the ticket, but still the African-American turnout was much, much lower. The Latino vote that was promised in North Carolina and Arizona and Florida and elsewhere didn't show up there either. So, and you know something, as far as lying to the pollsters, I mean, there was probably the pollsters missed so many things, but aside from maybe Michigan, Pennsylvania, and Wisconsin, and I'm not diminishing those states, but for the most part, the states kind of voted the way we thought. We thought Trump was going to win Ohio. We thought that Trump
not
was
by
going
that
to
much,
even.
But
no, not by much. And it was almost dead even in Florida as well. And actually, if you look at states like Florida, Pennsylvania, and Wisconsin, maybe even Michigan, if it weren't for the third-party candidates, maybe Hillary Clinton could have won them because they made the difference in the narrow margin between the two of them.
The African-American voters... I heard a woman on NPR this morning who's head of an organization in Florida of African-American women Democrats. And she was speaking really about African-Americans in general, that she didn't believe that Hillary Clinton had made a connection with folks in the black community. And she wasn't there. She wasn't seen. She was sending surrogates in, you know, to some of the big cities with the African-American populations. And, I mean, it would have been almost impossible for her to replicate the kind of excitement among African-American voters that they felt in 2008. And also, you know, even in 2012, there was still a considerable amount of it, but it would have been hard for her to replicate it. But she's clearly came up far short of what she needed. I know she did here in Ohio. I can guarantee. I've looked at the numbers and it's clear as day.
Go ahead, Ken.
I was going to say she was never going to replicate what Obama did in 08 and 12. Yeah. But at the same time, if you looked at during the primaries, especially in the southern states, she was getting overwhelming black vote in the Democratic primaries against Bernie Sanders.
Oh, yeah.
And so there was a sense that, I mean, look, maybe that's just comparing Clinton to Sanders, but Clinton's numbers among African-Americans in the primaries, again, especially in the deep south states, were very comparable to what Obama got in the early primaries. So you just wonder, I mean, so a lot of people thought that it may not be the same enthusiasm in November, but certainly they would come out, and they did not.
Oh, Ken, and whether it's fair or not, one of the criticisms I heard from a political expert was that there seemed to be this expectation that she was just going to get the Obama coalition of voters automatically. And he said that she failed to go out and ask them for their vote, and that was... Whether that's a fair criticism or not, it seems logical.
Yeah. Well, you always hear that argument that Democrats are taking African Americans for granted. Trump right. made that argument throughout the campaign. He said to black voters, you know, vote for me. What have you got to lose? Now, of course, some said, my goodness, where do I begin? But others said, look, you know, if the Democrats do take our vote for granted, and maybe we are a voting bloc that needs to be wooed. Now, I don't think that's the case, but certainly the enthusiasm, the need to get out and vote, especially with polls showing her with a lead and an increasing lead, maybe they felt that, you know, if you looked at the polls, well, my vote isn't that important.
Right. I think maybe they got, you know, sort of lulled to sleep by some of the polling, too. Yeah. And they just stayed home. They didn't get involved.
Hey, Ken, we need to get some people lined up on this trivia question, too. So could you give that to us again, please?
The last senator elected, last person elected to the Senate from Ohio, the same year a Republican was elected president on his first try.
Okay. If you think you know the answer to that, give us a call at 513-419-7100. And the first correct caller is going to win a political junkie button. But in the meantime, let's talk with Diane in Blue Ash, who actually has a question for us here. Hi, Diane.
Hi.
Go right ahead.
What is your opinion about the validity of the, or the presence, I guess, of the Electoral College? Is it an archaic system that we should be reconsidering? I'd love to hear a discussion around that, since Hillary did win the popular vote.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I was just talking to President Al Gore the other day. No, and that happened with Al Gore right. in 2000 as sure. well, that he won the popular vote and lost the Electoral College. Look, there are Democrats who are furious. I think the last time this also happened was Benjamin Harrison, the Republican, was elected yes. president in 18-something, I think 82 or yeah. 84. Something like that, but again, with yeah. Grover Cleveland winning the popular vote, so it just seems like it happens against Democrats. And, you know, there are a lot of people say, well, that's really not fair, and that's not what it should be, but I guarantee that since it has to be a constitutional amendment for that to change, you know that the states like New Hampshire right. and North Carolina and Colorado and Arizona, those key so-called battleground states, and Iowa, they would never give up that power. Otherwise, no. the candidates would only. I mean, look, there's a reason why the candidates didn't campaign in California, Texas, and New York and Illinois, because everybody knew where those states were going to go. But if you got rid of the Electoral College, then every vote would count. In other words, if I were a Republican in Maryland, my vote wouldn't count at all. Or if I were a Democrat in Texas, mm-hmm. my vote wouldn't count because I had no chance of carrying the state. But if you counted everybody's vote equally, which is the argument for getting rid of the Electoral College, then it would matter for everybody to come out and vote.
Now, there are some people who would like to see Electoral College remain, but be distributed by congressional district.
Right, and that's what Maine and Nebraska have.
Right,
they have the only that time already. That's ever made a difference was in 2008. Obama won the congressional district around Omaha, right. so he got a electoral vote out of Nebraska. Even though in 2008 McCain won the state, but those are the only two states that divide them by congressional district.
And that would be a good thing. I mean, that would be something that the Republicans would like because
yes,
then they
it
could
would favor them.
Yeah, it would favor them because then they could go into places like California, and instead of getting skunked every year, they could at least pick up a fair number of congressional district electoral votes.
That is absolutely correct.
But as Ken says, all of this would take a constitutional amendment, and constitutional amendments are very difficult. Very difficult to pass, and I just don't see it happening.
Although, as we're having this conversation, and Diane, I think this is a great question because I've been asked this question nonstop for the past 2 days. Mm. But obviously, Maine and Nebraska didn't have a constitutional amendment to make it happen, so it probably would have to be a state legislature thing.
Yeah.
Although, So that may be a very interesting thing. But of course, right now, Donald Trump would very much like. I mean, he said several times in the past that we've got to do away with the Electoral College. I'm sure he's not saying that today.
No.
Didn't he end up winning the most electoral votes of any Republican in what, the past couple of decades?
Well, I have to go back to that. Yeah, he probably did sure pass Bush. Did he pass Bush in 2004? He may have.
Right.
Yeah, because they're still counting some states. I don't think everybody's in yet either, are they?
Right. And of the three that are still out there, Michigan and Arizona are probably going to go to Trump. New Hampshire will probably go to Hillary Clinton. So even whatever Trump's numbers are right now, they're likely to increase because it looks like he's going to win Michigan.
Yeah.
More with Ken Rudin and Howard Wilkinson coming up. You can join us at 513-419-7100. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Mark Haney along with political junkie Ken Rudin and WVXU political reporter Howard Wilkinson. You can be part of our discussion by calling 513-419-7100, email talk at WVXU.org, or you can find us on Facebook or Twitter. And let's talk with Joe in Indiana. Joe, good afternoon.
Good afternoon. I just kind of have more of a, I guess you could call it a question. Let's put this out there. We voted for politicians and military personnel for the last 240 years, right? Okay.
Pretty much, yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, so now we voted for somebody who wasn't. What's the definition of insanity? Doing the same thing over and over, expecting different results? So now we're crazy, not insane.
Well, we'll find out. Joe, thanks for the call.
I missed a bit. Did he say in the beginning that we've elected military men to the presidency? Is that what he said?
He was saying we've elected people with a military background, background, yeah, or some kind of governmental background, and this is the first time we've had somebody that was a complete outsider. He's a businessman.
Not only was an outsider, he got five deferments to avoid service in the Army.
Yeah.
And, yeah. I mean, he has a Purple Heart because somebody gave it to him. He said that's so great how I worked for this Purple Heart.
Yes.
And you have these veterans around the country who said, are you kidding me? I mean what we've sacrificed.
And had to have somebody on his staff explain to him what Gold Star family meant.
Yeah, yeah. No, that's pretty remarkable.
Yeah.
Let's talk to Mike. Hi, Mike.
How are you?
Good, thanks. Go right ahead.
No, I guess I would offer my opinion on what happened, and I guess I'm from the other side of the aisle, where, you know, the viewpoint of the Trump supporter is that he's uneducated, rural, and stupid, as some of the, celebrities have pointed out. But I'm the exact opposite. I have multiple undergraduate degrees, a graduate degree, and a professional certification on top of that. I think what threw me over the edge was the constant elitist globalization attitude, from the Democratic Party. In other words, it's condescending attitude towards everybody else that didn't believe in every single thing that they believed in. Mm. So, You know, borderless countries. You know, I grew up in America. You know, we've built a great country, and everybody's ashamed of it and believes that we should, you know, let everybody in. Look, these other countries have just as many resources as we have, but we've put together a country that's second to none. And I guess, sort of acquiescing and saying, hey, listen, everybody can come in. It's pure, you know, it's globalization. Hey,
Mike, I wonder if you'd agree with something. The Trump's premise of make America great again, did that grab you?
You know what? It's not necessarily that. It was more a vote against what the left has been trying to say was wrong with us. And if you disagree with them, you're called some sort of, you know, you're labeled as, you know, a hate person or a misogynist.
Deplorable.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, and I'm not deplorable. I pay my taxes every year, trust me. I live in a different state in which my family lives just to pay the bills. So it's so from that perspective, it was so condescending in the attitude that she's going to win no matter what, and or whoever you put up there is going to win no matter what, and if you disagree, then you're uneducated and stupid and deplorable is what set me over the edge. I'm like, this is not what America's about.
Hmm. So that was the straw that broke the camel's back in your case.
Yeah. It was indeed. So, I mean, look, I'm as compassionate as the next person. Does that mean everything needs to be free? No. I'm working my tail off to make sure I'm paying for my family's needs and resources and everything else. And, yes, I put the time in to get the multiple degrees, to get the master's degree. And am I a millionaire? Absolutely not. But it seems to me like everybody wants the easy way out. And look at the current set of college students these days. You know, they're all upset and rioting and missing school and crying because their candidate didn't get in. Well, what about the last 8 years? I mean, you know, did you see Republicans or anybody else out there rioting and complaining because their candidates get in? No, they kind of tucked their tail.
Hey, Mike,
and went back to work.
Mike, I appreciate where you're coming from. Let's let Ken and Howard.
Oh my God, there's so much to respond to.
Yeah.
And I think Mike is making a very, very good point on a lot of things. Let me just say one thing about the rioting. Had they lost, you know that if it were the Trump supporters, if Hillary Clinton had won and the Trump supporters were breaking windows, you know that everybody. The media would be going ballistic. Having said that, you also had the prospect of the candidate himself saying he may not accept the results. So
right.
So that was kind of a weird thing as well. So it's not a good thing to watch these Clinton supporters do this vandalism. But
no.
You almost had a presidential candidate who almost said the same thing, that he wouldn't accept it. But what more importantly, what Mike is saying, and this is where the media failed to get it completely, is that there was an elitist, I don't know if
yes,
elitist is the right,
right
word, but there was a condescending view of those Trump people with the guns and the Bible, and they pay their taxes, unlike the candidate himself, but they pay their taxes, right, and they believe in this country. And then when things change drastically, like, for example, same-sex marriage, not everybody in the world believed in that. Certainly Hillary Clinton didn't believe in it until 2013. So in other words, not everybody was all on board on same-sex marriage. They weren't on board on the Affordable Care Act with the higher premiums. They weren't on board with the jobs being shipped overseas because of globalization. So there was a lot of things changing in the country, and I think the reason we, the media, the pollsters, the experts, the pundits didn't get it is because we talked to each other and we said, well, we know better because this is the way it's going. But had we gone into Mike's home and the homes like Mike around the country, we would have seen this dissatisfaction.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And I mean, I could even see it, you know, when I'd go to Trump rallies and talk to people. I mean, you know, there were a lot of people like Mike.
They're half the country.
Right.
They're not a lot of people. It's half the country.
Right. Yeah.
We still have the trivia question out there, too, Ken. Who was elected to the Senate from Ohio the last time a Republican won the presidency on his first try?
You know, the funny thing about this trivia question, and Mark, you and I were talking about it earlier, is that this was an easy one because we didn't want to spend a lot of time on the trivia question. You should have seen the first one, Howard. I'll tell you later. This was impossible to get. This is supposed to be the easy one.
Yeah, this is supposed to be the easy one. Dave in Kenton County, though, thinks he might know the answer to this. So let's see if Dave has the answer to it. Hi, Dave.
Hey, how's it going?
Good. Who do you think it was on the trivia question?
I was thinking Bob Taft.
Okay, keep it at that.
Eisenhower got it.
Okay, Bob Taft.
Well, Bob Taft was elected to the Senate in 1938. Let's see. So he was elected in 44 and 50. And so, no, he was elected in 1944, which is a Democrat FDR. He was elected again in 50 when there was no presidential election.
Ken,
so
Ken.
No Bob Taft.
Okay, Ken, now, wait a minute. Now, I thought it was who was the senator when the Republican...
Who was elected senator?
Elected senator the same year a
Republican was elected president.
Okay. Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Okay.
Okay.
But I do love talking about Bob Taft, though.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Dave, anything else?
Hey, look,
any of them.
All right, I blew that. Yeah, but hey, I tell you what. Yeah, I do want to say, and I don't hear this in too much of the commentary. I'm kind of a transplanted Ohio person, so I notice a lot of things around here. I don't think enough. I don't think it was just economics that prompted the great white vote. I think it was racism, and you can see it on the bumper stickers where I work. It reminds me of South Africa in the last days of apartheid. Take back our country. Let's take, you know, that. And that is sort of standard currency down here. And I don't know about the rest of the country, but I suspect it's a lot there. And you got older people that generally who are frightened. I don't think it's so much economics. I think it's more racism. Anyway, I'll leave you with that pleasant thought.
Okay. Thanks, Dave.
Can I just add something
sure.
about that? I mean, not that the election of Barack Obama ended racism in this country. Obviously, it didn't. But we elected a black person in 2008 and 2012. Even if we objected to what happened after 2008,
right.
The country had a chance to change its mind and vote race in 2012, and it didn't. What about sexism? What about misogyny? What about the fact that people who had no problem voting for Barack Obama said, well, Hillary Clinton may not be the right candidate? I'm not blaming Clinton's loss on sexism, although that should be part of it. Mm-hmm. But racism doesn't feel right in this case.
Let's see. Let's talk to Rich in Harrison. He's got a guess at the trivia question. Hi, Rich.
Hey, how are you?
Good, thanks.
How about James Garfield and Lincoln?
No.
Wow, that's going way back.
Yeah, James, no. Was Garfield was I know Garfield was a cat. No, but was Garfield also a senator? I don't know
no.
if he was. But
he was a member of the House. Actually, yeah, he was a member of the House when he was elected president.
And he was assassinated.
Exactly.
He was the last member of the House ever elected a sitting member
president.
Of the House.
Yeah.
So it wasn't Garfield. No.
Okay, let's try. Paul and Kenwood.
Are you sure Garfield never served in the Senate?
Well, but let me put it this way: nobody was elected to the Senate back then. Back then, they were almost they were elected by the state legislature.
Right, right. Yeah. There was no direct election
no
of
election,
senators
yeah.
at that point. So, thanks, Rich. We appreciate the call. Okay. Paul and Kenwood wants to give this a try. Hi, Paul.
Yeah, maybe I'm overthinking this question, but I'm pretty sure we're talking about George Bush 2000, so it just has to be the senator elected in 2000, and that was Mike DeWine.
And that is the correct answer.
All right.
You were, boy. You were not overthinking it. It was that simple.
You got it. You got it.
It was supposed to be a question that we would dismiss right away and say, okay, let's get to the news of the week. But,
this is one I even figured out. So if I could figure it out, anybody could figure this one out. Thank you very much, Paul. And stay on the line. We want to get
good
the information
job, Paul.
On where to send
you.
your prize to. Very good job. Thank you.
And before that, by the way, I think I'm not mistaken, it was Richard Nixon and William Saxby in 68.
Yes. Now, I had that originally, and then I said, no, I scratched that out and put in the right answer.
Well, yeah, wait till we get the first question.
So then, the correct answer was Mike DeWine.
Mike DeWine.
In the year 2000. George W. Bush was elected to the presidency.
Yes.
Again, to join our conversation, 513-419-7100. Ken, you sounded like you were headed somewhere.
I was going to say, and let the record show that Mark Haney knew the answer.
Very good, Mark.
Which, again, if I knew the answer, this should have been like the easiest question on the planet. We had an email from Jermaine, and she said both the candidates, Donald Trump, Hillary Clinton, were flawed, but they were conciliatory. They had such a conciliatory tone on both of their speeches, his victory speech and her concession speech, and she says she sees that as a positive sign.
I hope so. I honestly do. I mean, I hope that continues. I mean, there was just a few hours ago a meeting at the White House between President Obama and President-elect Trump.
Wait, say that again. Say that again. Name again.
President-elect Trump.
My God.
Yeah.
I mean, just seriously.
Hey, buddy.
I mean, I'm sorry. This is not a criticism, but I am still astonished.
Mm-hmm. I know.
We wrote him off for the nomination. We said there's no way he wins.
Ken, that's the first time I've spoken those words. I mean,
I know.
I mean, it is.
Whether you like him or not, or whether you agree with his policies or not, you have to admit, he was tenacious. He survived a crowded GOP primary field, like you were pointing out here, Ken. He somehow managed to survive himself. He outlasted all the bad news that kept coming out. And then he beat Hillary Clinton, who hadn't really had a well-organized campaign.
Yes.
She did. Now, she also had, I mean, there were so many, we talked earlier, especially with Mike's phone call, we talked about the reasons why Trump won. And I think Mike's phone call, people should listen to it again, because I think it really hit the nail on the head. But for why Hillary Clinton lost, I mean, there was the intervention of James Comey on October 28th, who said, well, they may be all these emails again. I'm not saying that hurt her, but she did have momentum that was stopped in its tracks around that time.
That's right.
And even when he came back 9 days later, Comey came back and said, well, there really wasn't anything there. We were right all along not to prosecute. The fact is, we spent the last 10, 11 days of the campaign talking about, as Bernie Sanders once said, her damn emails.
Right.
And that's the last thing Hillary Clinton wanted.
And crooked Hillary.
And crooked Hillary, exactly. And then, of course, if you looked at the numbers in the polls, even though she was leading, her disapprovals were the highest ever.
Yeah.
The releases of the WikiLeaks stuff, talking about how within the internal conversations of the campaign, how they were dissing other Democrats. That didn't make anybody happy. The rising premiums of the Affordable Care Act, that didn't help her cause at all.
No.
And then you still had those Jill Stein / Never Hillary people who just said there's no way, you know, the Bernie-crats, many of them, most of them came over to Hillary Clinton. A lot of them said, I see no difference between Donald Trump and Hillary Clinton, and that didn't help her either.
Well, yeah, I always look at this as a big turning point for Trump when he dumped Paul Manafort and brought in Kellyanne Conway, because she, to me, worked wonders. It was miraculous how she was able to get him back under control and make him look reasonably respectable.
Yeah, for the most part. I mean, still, when he was on the stump in front of a big crowd, he could still go pretty far off the rails. But
in his big speech in Gettysburg, which should have been a summation of his campaign, he said, I'm going to sue those women who attacked me. I mean, this is supposed to be a major...
This was a major policy speech of what I will do as president.
And he's talking
about suing women who'd accused him of sexual harassment.
Yeah.
And when he brought in Kellyanne Conway, he also brought in Steve Bannon of
Breitbart News
and all his alt-right connections. No, I agree with you. I think the campaign did turn around. He stopped tweeting at 4 o'clock in the morning. Mm-hmm. He really let the news, the anti-Clinton news, take hold, and they stayed in the background a lot. And a lot of Republicans came home to him in the last few days, which was also a big deal because they were staying away from him for most of the campaign. But I don't know if it was the grown-ups running the campaign. I just kind of thought that he may have won in spite of Donald Trump.
I don't know. I mean, when he becomes president.
Say that again.
When he becomes president.
I'm sorry. I just can't. It's just remarkable.
I know. I'm trying to get used to it here, Ken. Okay. But when he becomes president, somebody, I don't know who it's going to be, but somebody is going to have to get him off of Twitter.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. You think that's possible?
Hmm?
You think that's going to be possible?
I don't know if it's going to be possible, but it could do enormous amounts of damage.
Seriously, here's a serious question. Has everybody, any president ever given an inaugural address on Twitter?
Yeah.
That's never happened, right?
We could see it for the first time here.
It's incredible. It was mentioned on this show first.
We will continue the conversation with Ken and Howard. You can join us at 513-419-7100. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Mark Haney, and joining me this afternoon, political junkie Ken Rudin and WVXU political reporter Howard Wilkinson. You can be part of the conversation at 513-419-7100. You can email talk at wvxu.org, or you can find us on Facebook or Twitter. Ken, you were mentioning at his Gettysburg address how he was saying he was going to sue all these women who'd accused him of sexual harassment and sexual misconduct. What do you think happens now with those particular cases?
Well, that's a great question. Yeah. I don't know why anything would go away. There were so many things that we heard at the end, like, if I'm elected, I'm going to appoint a special prosecutor to prosecute Hillary Clinton and throw her in jail. When I'm elected, all these things that would happen when I'm going to be elected. And there's still a case against Trump University that's out there. There's still accusations of sexual assaults that are supposed to go to trial. He said he would release his taxes before the election. He promised he would, and he didn't. There are so many things that are out there, and then he gets elected. Can I just say one more thing just before? I don't want us to lose this one thought, but one of your sponsors we just heard on there was, you know, the show was supported by Everything But the House. That was my slogan, assuming that Hillary Clinton won and that the Democrats would take over the Senate, and I figured the Democrats would win everything but the House, and yet not only did the Republicans keep the Senate, they only lost two seats, but they only lost about five or six seats in the House when so many people thought that a lot of Republicans were going to go down. It's remarkable from top to bottom on the Republican ticket. Unbelievable.
And that to me, Ken, was maybe even the most amazing thing, more so than him winning, was the fact that not only did he win, but you have complete GOP control of Congress now. I always thought people would say, hey, if we put a Republican in power, let's try to shift the balance of power on the House and Senate side a little bit. So you've got them, you know, we got some checks and balances working there. But
I wonder, too, you know, what the relationship is going to be between the leadership of Congress and this new president. You know, certain things are pretty obvious. Obamacare, you know, they're going to get rid of that one way or the other. It's just a matter of what they replace it with. Immigration reform, this path to citizenship, that's just dead as a doornail. But, you know, other things, it might be difficult for him to, we don't know what his legislative agenda is, number one. Number two, it might be very difficult for him to deal with the Republican leadership in Congress.
Exactly. I think the number two is even a bigger thing to focus on, given the fact that Paul Ryan said over and over again that I am not going to campaign with Donald Trump. Of course, Donald Trump's allies were talking about, well, let's have a coup against Paul Ryan as Speaker. And I think the election's coming up in five days. So it is very interesting to see. It will be very interesting to see the dynamic between Trump and Ryan.
And they're meeting about right now, I believe.
513-419-7100 if you'd like to join the conversation. You can also email talk@wvxu.org. And we got an email from Nate who said, the party of Reagan is now the party of Trump. So he's wondering about how this changes the GOP. We've gone from populism to, or from conservatism to populism. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, let me start. I mean, one of the many reasons why so many Republicans and conservatives refuse to endorse Trump is that he has so many views that are anathema to many historic Republican positions on trade, on foreign policy. Do we get rid of NATO? Do we buddy up to Putin? There are so many things that are just so remarkable that. You know, you heard comments from I think, who was it? Was it, it may have been George Will, who just said how appalled Nancy Reagan was by a Trump candidacy. Look, but even
this is why George W. Bush couldn't cast a ballot. He couldn't vote for anybody.
I think he may have voted for Hillary Clinton. George H.W. Bush may have voted for Hillary Clinton. And Jeb Bush didn't vote either, and Romney didn't vote for him. I mean, the Republican Party is topsy-turvy, but just as it looks like the Clintons are gone from the scene, which I never thought we'd say in our lifetime, unless Chelsea runs it, but it looks like the Clintons are gone, but the Bushes are gone, too. It's a different Republican Party. It's no longer, I mean, Ronald Reagan, you know, is a saint with many Republicans and conservatives, but this is not his party anymore. This is Donald Trump's party, and it's a new GOP completely.
What about the Democratic Party, Ken?
Well, that's a great question. I mean, you know, we did see that Bernie Sanders and Elizabeth Warren, that wing of the Democratic Party, clearly was moving to the Democratic Party to the left. It seems like Hillary Clinton was moving that way, kicking and screaming on many issues like the free colleges and the $15 minimum wage. But you don't know. First of all, you don't know if Trump is going to spend as much time fighting Republicans as he is Democrats. But I kind of think that there's a certain part of the wing of the. Remember, just a few days ago, both Elizabeth Warren and Bernie Sanders said we're going to keep our eyes out on Hillary Clinton. We're not going to let her be too centrist. We're not going to let her pick Robert Rubin types to her administration. So I think with the disappearance, if that's the case, of Bill and Hillary Clinton, the party may move further to the left as the Republican mm-hmm. Party may be moving further to the right. And who knows where Trump is in the middle of all those things?
Yeah, I think you might end up with, you know, the people like not so much Sanders, but I mean, Elizabeth Warren, Sherrod Brown in Ohio, you know, who's up for re-election in a couple of years. Probably going to be a big voice, and he's from that wing of the party.
That's the reason I actually thought that Hillary Clinton was going to pick Sherrod Brown for vice president.
Oh, I did too, for a long time.
That was my prediction, yeah.
Yeah.
513-419-7100 to join us, and let's talk to Lisa in Montgomery. Hi, Lisa.
Hi. There's a lot of talk about what next for the Republican Party, what next for the Dems, and, you know, certainly referring back to the 2012 autopsy, you know, that the Republicans did and then ignored. I'm wondering, you know, given the fact that any time Trump said anything, all the air got sucked out of the room, and the media, radio, TV, cable, internet, everybody took the bait. And so I think the media need to do some soul searching and their own postmortem. And I'd like to hear what our political guys have to say about
Lisa,
that.
Lisa, okay. I think you're absolutely right. I think the media did let Trump kind of suck all the air out of the room, particularly during the primary season. That's what created him. It was, you know, this enormous field of candidates. And he was the guy who attracted the attention. I mean, he was the guy who was the story. And, he got more time on the debates. He was, able to call in to the Sunday talk shows instead of actually show up in a studio and be seen. They just bent over backwards for him. And I've never seen anything like that.
Howard is exactly right with the media regarding that part of the media. The show is called Meet the Press,
right.
Face the Nation, not I'll see you by carrier pigeon or by email. I mean, it's just remarkable that they allowed them to do it. I think the newspapers, by and large, especially in the general election, did a good job pointing out the inaccuracies and the contradictions in Trump's career, as with Hillary Clinton's career.
Right.
And, of course, everybody yells at me for saying, well, it's not false equivalency. No, there's not. I mean, just because two candidates are tall, that doesn't mean they're both the same height. So both candidates had tremendous faults and problems. They may not have been the same, but I think what Lisa makes a very, very good point in that in the beginning, CNN couldn't get enough of Donald Trump. They would, after they'd have a 2-hour interview, then they would interview a 2-hour debate, and then they would interview him saying, how do you think you did in the debate? They couldn't get enough of him.
And then they would have six talking heads go on
Corey
about
Lee
it.
They hired Corey Lee Wendowski
as
a panelist.
Yeah.
This guy who has such disdain for the press and women, and yet he's on talking about the Trump campaign, which he's getting paid by.
Well, Howard points out it's ironic. Trump runs around saying the media are the worst people on earth. they help in many ways propel him in the primaries. Yeah. And Trump's a media person himself, though. So, you know, that comes into play,
too. That'll work, sure. But I would see him at the campaign rallies, and he would, always point at the press riser, the media riser, and, say, these are the worst human beings in the face of the earth. And everybody at the rally would shake their fists and yell at the press. But then after the rally was over, I would see a bunch of them come up to the press riser, and they'd want to take selfies with the network correspondents. I mean, it was very strange.
Let me say one more thing about the press, because this is an important thing about the Trump presidency as well. He has really talked about curtailing the freedom of the press in ways Obama hasn't done, Nixon hasn't done. Mm-hmm. I mean, this goes well beyond whatever they've done. And you just, you know, talk about, well, Hillary Clinton wasn't friendly with the press and she was guarded. Donald Trump is talking about really erasing constitutional freedoms. And again, was this just rhetoric during the campaign? Maybe. But something who people who believe in a free press, believe in the right to dissent, they should be well aware of what happens with that on that front.
And Ken, you know, we're talking about how this reshapes the election for the Republicans and the Democrats. Bridget sent us an email. She wanted to know, are there any up and coming Democrats who to keep an eye on in the next few years?
Well, you know something, on my Political Junkie podcast that came out this morning, one of the people mentioned Kamala Harris, the senator-elect from California, only the second African-American Democrat, female Democrat in the history of the Senate. She's supposed to be very smart, very charismatic, very interesting to look at. Right. Sherrod Brown, you have to look at. Elizabeth Warren is not a new face, but she seems like a new spirit in the Congress.
What about Tammy Duckworth?
Tammy Duckworth is interesting. She's a senator-elect from Illinois, defeated right. Mark Kirk, an Iraq War veteran. Yeah. She's very interesting. There are a lot of new people who came to the forefront as for example, even possible VPs in 2016 that are to watch. But clearly, the Democrats need a new bench. I mean, look, Bernie Sanders, Hillary Clinton, Nancy Pelosi, they're in their late 90s. I mean, of course, they're not.
No,
but I mean,
they've
been around a long time. Right. They do need a new generation of leadership.
Yes.
Let's talk with Laura in Walnut Hills. Hi, Laura.
Oh, hi.
Go right ahead. You're
on.
Can
you hear me?
Yep.
Okay. I just wanted to say that I think you're absolutely right about print journalism versus, you know, television and social media in terms of people being, you know, I think that newspaper reporters being a little bit more discerning. But I want to get back to the fact that my worry about this campaign was always that we were asking a, you know, somewhat controversial woman candidate, and I'm a Democrat. I supported her, and I supported the president, but I supported the president over her in 2008. But in any case, we were asking the American people, which were just as divided, maybe for different reasons, in 2000. If she goes on to win the popular vote and she didn't win electoral college, just like Al Gore and George W. Bush. But I think we're divided over different things that in my mind are, you know, quite disturbing. And one is that I have seen the president disrespected over the last 8 years, the likes of which I never have in my life. And I have a PhD from Berkeley and I grew up in New York City and I never saw Republican presidents or any candidate sort of to demean people the way Trump did. And having grown up in New York City, he is a man that has, you know, been a partner of some really diabolical figures historically, like Roy Cohn. So I just think that that we were asking people that are maybe more moderate even than I am in terms of the Democratic Party and even some sort of moderate or Republicans to go for a woman after 8 years of an African-American man. And I just think that you have to think about the intersections here of, yes, class, who voted which way, but also gender and race. It's very hard for me to see this otherwise because I think that he dated.
And Laura, but yeah. we have to wrap up. I want to let Ken comment on this, so thank you.
Well, yeah, I mean, Laura, the frustration I hear from Laura is what I've heard from so many other people. They were just the kind of vitriol. It's one thing. Look, the country is split. We've seen it on social media as well. But never have I seen it coming from a presidential candidate in such personal terms, in such ugly terms. Damn. And then for him to say magnanimously, OK, we're all going to be fine now. Let's all hug. I don't know if you could erase the ugliness of the past year.
You can't take it back. Once the words are out of your mouth, you cannot take them back.
Well, Ken and Howard, thanks so much for joining us this afternoon.
Thanks, guys.
Okay.
political junkie Ken Rudin and WVXU political reporter Howard Wilkinson. Thanks for listening to Cincinnati Edition. Archives of our programs are available at WVXU.org. The producer for today's show was Pete Reitmeier. The assistant producer was Belinda Kai. Dave Shermer was the technical director. I'm Mark Haney. Stay tuned for Here and Now, coming up next on 91.7 WVXU. Each Friday on Cincinnati Edition, we look at the people and events that are affecting Greater Cincinnati. This week, we'll analyze Tuesday's local elections and discuss what the results could mean to our region over the next several years. We'll also look at other recent top stories, and we invite you to join the discussion with your questions and comments. That's our weekly news review on the next Cincinnati Edition, tomorrow afternoon at 1 on 91.7 WVXU.